Ah, yes, the power of Cuba. Its culture and identity and communist government, in the end, were stronger than the U.S. embargo that was trying for 50 years to compel regime change.
Cuba es auténtica.
Authentic Cuba has been reaching out to tourists for decades, just not Americans until now. Some travel restrictions are being eased by the Obama administration this week for a generation that knows nothing of the corrupt tourist mecca for Americans that Cuba became under Fulgencio Batista before the revolution. Today, U.S. tourism to Cuba is something of a blank slate.
White sand beaches.
Deep water diving.
Dancing and drinking.
Rum, cigars, and killer vintage cars.
Art and culture.
Vibrant energy by day.
Romance by night.
Cuba. It's calling your name.
That's right. Soon Havana could be a destination like Disney, Vegas, Tahoe, and Mohegan Sun, as our little attempt at a commercial here suggests. Airlines and travel agents will soon be allowed to provide services for eager travelers. Credit cards can be used there, and Americans can send larger sums of money to relatives there, up to $2,000 every 3 months instead of the current $500 limit. Julia Cook is a journalist and author of The Other Side of Paradise, Life in the New Cuba. Julia, welcome to The Takeaway.
Hi, John.
So when you think about American tourism in Cuba, do you get scared of what Cuba might become, or what sorts of discoveries and clashes of culture do you see?
I'm not scared at all. I think that we've been waiting for this for a long time. Those of us who have been going to Cuba. The rest of the world has been visiting Cuba for quite some time now, since the early 90s. So we've been waiting for this.
It's a great place to go and speak German. Now,
totally. A lot remains to be seen as far as how businesses are going to negotiate these new changes. But as far as people go and people visiting other people in Cuba, it's great.
Let's see about what might be the adventure you could concoct for a first adopter American who wants maybe this spring or summer to try out Cuba. What would you suggest as a landing point? Where should you go? What would you see? And how can you get a feel for both the revolution of Cuba and its traditional pre-revolutionary past?
I love Havana. I spent years in Havana, and it's one of my favorite cities in the world. It's probably my favorite city in the world.
Really?
Definitely. Yeah, it's so interesting. There are so many different layers to explore. It's such a unique contradiction in that it is so old and at the same time so contemporary. So you have this strange, what people refer to as a frozen in time feel because of its architecture and its lacking infrastructure in many ways.
And for people who know Florida, it is the anti-Miami.
Completely.
Yeah.
But that's not because necessarily of how old it feels. That's the kind of surface version. But there's a graciousness to it and to how people are in it. Old school manners are still very important in many places. There's no internet, which is hardly a good thing for Cubans. The internet penetration in Cuba is 11%. But it results in a kind of palate cleanser for foreign tourists who are perhaps oversaturated.
But that's going to change.
It may. We hope it will.
And you start in Havana. Then where do you go?
There are a bunch of places outside of Havana that I really, really love that aren't necessarily the spots that tourists immediately think of. Vinales is a pretty well-trafficked tourist destination. It's a farming area that's 2 hours west of Havana that's dotted with these gorgeous mogotes that are limestone rock outcroppings. They're almost vertical. It's kind of a nascent rock climbing scene.
Hmm.
But it's just so slow and beautiful. It's one of the most visually stunning landscapes I've ever seen. I also really love Cienfuegos, which is a city of 150,000 on the southern coast of Cuba. It was actually initially settled by a Frenchman from Louisiana, and it's got these beautiful cake frosting, precious 19th and 20th century mansions that are really nicely preserved, but it's not as touristy as, say, Trinidad, which a lot of tourist itineraries put you in, which can feel a little cloying. There's a lot of tourist infrastructure. A lot of people are kind of out to hustle tourists.
Port-au-Prince is very Vegas.
Well, it just is. It's a little more – Cienfuegos is a little slower. It's got that kind of Cuban graciousness that I think people might associate with a pre-revolution era, but which is still very much alive.
Is it public transit you use? Is it rent a car?
You can rent a car. There are great tourist buses that are quite expensive, but they're really comfortable. They have the – lie-back seats and whatnot. There's also, you know, for really adventurous tourists, there are a lot of different Cuban forms of transportation. When I lived there, I took a week and traveled around the country on only Cuban transportation, which meant you know, riding in the back of modified garbage trucks and hitching rides in, you know, as a hitchhiker and, you know, going on trains that are very old and very slow. But, you know, you wind up striking up a conversation with the person across from you, and it's just a completely different way to see the city.
Now, we can talk romantically about this frozen in time, old infrastructure. But I suspect as the economy begins to address some of the shortcomings that are part of what the embargo is all about, modernization will come to the trains and other things. Do Cubans and do you fear that?
I'm sure Cubans definitely don't. Bus service was a really big issue in Cuba, which Raul Castro actually did a lot toward fixing. When he first came into power, there weren't enough buses and they were often very overcrowded and the service was terrible. Not having a good public transportation system in an urban area of 2.1 million is pretty crazy. And he did a lot toward addressing that. He completely improved it. And that was met with nothing but gratefulness, happiness, excitement. So I don't think that we're necessarily fearing improvements in infrastructure.
Looking back at the Cold War, it does seem when you look at this particular scene of the Cold War that there's a big get over it kind of feel. Certainly that's part of what is being said to America. You know, get over this embargo. It's outmoded. It's gone. Is there a similar argument in certain quarters inside Cuba as well that the Castros need to kind of, you know, get over it? It's over, guys. Settle. What would that sound like?
Oh, it sounds like the way everyone talks. Cubans are very savvy. They have a workaround for almost everything that they've been having to deal with for the last 50 years. They're, on the one hand, very grateful for a lot of the good things that the Castros have done, namely medicine and education. But at the same time, they're kind of like, all right, let's on to the next thing. They're already moving beyond, far beyond what they've been limited to.
What would it cost to buy a 1956 Chevy carburetor?
Oh, I have no idea. That Chevy carburetor probably has a Mitsubishi engine or a, I don't know.
Julia Cook, journalist, author of The Other Side of Paradise, Life in the New Cuba, has very fond memories of living in Cuba and is determined to go back, I suspect.
Absolutely.
Havana, your favorite place.
Definitely.
Thanks, Julia.
Thank you.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.